Welcome to Subcreation, the podcast that seeks and finds the divine in art, story, even muscle cars, and everything in between. Hello, friends. Welcome back. It's always an honor and a pleasure for me to be with you with such a distinguished audience, obviously intelligent and well-refined. Well, I would like to think so anyway. Today we're going to look at a movie that came out probably 20 years ago now, or at least it's been quite a while, but it was the peak and the climax of a series of movies made by a company called Pixar. And it to this day stands as their best and most successful and lucrative picture called The Incredibles. I love that movie. I've seen it numerous times. I used my kids as an excuse to watch it, as I did many other movies aimed at children, because it's not really aimed at children. This movie has so many themes, so much to unpack, I don't even know where to begin. So let's get underway. Now, you know that this theme that we've been using of subcreation has certain elements to it. I get the word from Tolkien, I've mentioned in the past, and it's this idea that whatever world we create, we need to do that. That's the whole point of creativity. It should at least respect the primary created realm in which we dwell, because in so doing, it can bring to light the harmony and the hierarchy, the sacred ordering of that world within the subcreated world, and can teach us. In fact, we know that this is true because so many of the movies and the stories and the creations that fail precisely because they don't respect well enough the primary world. This movie, The Incredibles, albeit it's a movie about superheroes, nevertheless succeeds so well at pointing out things about our own world. That's why I believe it stands the test of time and why to this day it's the most successful Pixar movie. In fact, it's been one of the most animated, successful animated movies, not just computer-generated animated, but also the old-fashioned animated movies. Okay, why? Why the success? Why is it? Does it still get watched today? That's what I'm going to talk to you about. So, two main themes I want to begin with, and then from these we can branch off to the other themes. Again, there's so many that appear in the movie, can't talk about all of them. We'll do our best to talk about however many we can under these two topics. First topic, heroism, or in this case, superheroism. Heroism. For there to be such a thing as a hero, we have to think about this for a second. There has to be a respected and believed order, moral ordering of the universe, of the cosmos. Otherwise, we don't believe the concept of heroism. Let me give you an example. Let's take 9/11. These firemen, these emergency workers, policemen and ambulance people running into these buildings as they're crumbling, trying to help and rescue other people trapped therein. Now, we look at these men and women as heroes, and rightly so. In fact, from 9/11 on, emergency workers have been lauded as heroes because that experience really laid out for the public, for our own understanding, the kind of heroism that they utilize every day. Well, what is this heroism? Well, they are willing to sacrifice their own life for someone else's. Now, if we didn't accept the whole idea of an afterlife, of self-sacrifice as being good, if we didn't accept those two things, if we didn't accept the value and dignity of life, then this understanding of heroism would make no sense. We look at all the Medal of Honor winners in the military. What singled them out to win such a prestigious award or medal? They sacrificed themselves for the good of others. This has to be a stable, agreed upon moral framework in which the cosmos works, kind of one of the ways in which it works, or else we wouldn't universally agree on the idea of heroism or herohood or such a thing as a superhero. Well, what else is necessary? Well, if that's true, then the hero has to be able to recognize what's good, what's better, and what's best. so that they're willing to sacrifice sometimes even the good of their own lives or life, for the greater good or the best good, sacrificing themselves for the others. So this has to be an operating system within them, that they accept this. And I think this is really a beautiful expression of heroism within this movie. They're superheroes, supers, as the movie calls them, which means, yes, they have powers that go beyond the natural realm. In the case of one of the main characters, Mr. Incredible, he's called Mr. Incredible because of his amazing feats of strength. He can work out by lifting trains or hoisting trucks, stopping subways from going over the edge when the train track has been blown up. He has this amazing strength, but he's not just strong, he's also tough. He gets knocked around by this super robot that has whirling hands with propeller blades to chop him to bits, and he's able to grab it and avoid being injured when he's thrown into brick walls or into trees or other things. So he really is incredible, incredibly strong, incredibly tough. He ends up marrying a woman named Elastigirl. She can stretch in any position she wants, and she too has strength, as is evident when she knocks out a purse thief with one of her punches to show Mr. Incredible that she too can handle herself. And so it goes with all the superheroes. Frozone, who's able to make ice, and all the incredible children have their own feats of strength. So this is one of the things that makes them superheroes. Isn't it interesting that these facets of their superheroism are part and parcel to who they are? That's how they're created in this sub-created cosmos. They're created with superpowers. So there's one other characteristic with the superheroes that doesn't even deal with their strength or their abilities. It's their willingness to sacrifice themselves for others. They don't even question it. That their role is not to use their superhero strength to better themselves, to make themselves rich, to make themselves famous, to make themselves popular, to have all the chicks, or whatever the case may be. Rather, they recognize the responsibility incumbent upon them to use their powers to help other people. This is a given in the movie, and this is a beautiful way of expressing a moral truth in our world that I'm afraid gets overlooked and forgotten too oftentimes. They don't buck the system. They don't kick at the goad. They don't get upset if they're expected to go up against supervillains to protect innocent people, even when those innocent people don't respect them, which is another sub-theme within the movie. The envy and the media furor and the lawsuits that get aimed at the superheroes because they end up saving a guy's life who didn't want it to be saved. And then, of course, that forces them into this anonymity, and they have to suspend their superhero work, which they don't want to do. Yes, there's a certain selfishness to it, a certain self-glory, but there's also a deep-seated respect for the responsibilities that it brings, and they want to be true to those responsibilities. All right, so this brings a lot of drama in this movie with this subtext of responsibility and superheroism and special identity, etc. So their secret identities, which humorously they just wear a little mask and somehow the public doesn't recognize them when the mask is off and they're back in their normal jobs. But when the mask is on, that hides their identity well enough for the public not to recognize them. This is another interesting understanding that, hey, fame and popularity is actually going to prevent them from doing what they ought, namely being a superhero for our own good, for the good of society. And this is going to bring the plot to a crescendo when we look at the villain in just a second, who doesn't feel that responsibility at all, and his name is Syndrome, and we'll get to him. All right, so superheroism, it requires a recognition that there are goods, there are things to strive for that are the best, and then there are better things and then there are good things. There's a hierarchy, a structure, and that they are to sacrifice what is lesser for what is greater, and they willingly do so. And so this is part of what makes them superheroes. So their secret identities, which humorously they just wear a little mask and somehow the public doesn't recognize them when the mask is off and they're back in their normal jobs. But when the mask is on, that hides their identity well enough for the public not to recognize them. This is another interesting understanding that, hey, fame and popularity is actually going to prevent them from doing what they ought, namely being a superhero for our own good, for the good of society. And so this whole idea of what is their alter ego and their true identity and their true identity as normal citizens being their only identity, this whole theme of identity comes up. And it's an interesting subject because it assumes there is a normal identity. And Mr. Incredible recognizes his normal identity is as a superhero. But once they're pushed into anonymity from the lawsuits and all the trouble that they've created according to the public perception and how public opinion is shaped by the media, then they have to forget being superheroes. And then the identity becomes a question. And the Elastigirl, who's the wife of Mr. Incredible, she has no problem because she recognizes her identity now is as a mom and a wife. And she understands that this identity is at least as important, if not more so, than what she did as Elastigirl. In fact, she gets frustrated with her husband, Bob, because he doesn't recognize that. And in her perspective, he begins living in the past. And there's this scene with he and his buddy Frozone when they're listening to a police scanner to go find out what kind of criminal activity is out there so they could rush in before the cops get there and help things and then rush out before they're arrested or discovered. And so he wants to continue doing this. And Frozone says to him, you know, those were the glory days. That's the past. Let's let the past be in the past. Let's actually go bowling, like what we said we are going to do when we told our wives the reason why we were leaving for the evening. So here's another theme that goes with the identity, the theme of time. Are you living in the past or are you living in the present? And so time appears throughout the movie. There's clocks that appear several times in the movie, and it's always right around 2 o'clock, either just prior to 2 o'clock or exactly 2 o'clock. Now you get to go rewatch the movie and see this little detail. And I think this is because Brad Bird and the crew who made this wonderful movie are showing us that we've got to live in the present moment, that when we're looking at the time, it's supposed to be now. And so throughout the movie, whenever you see a clock, it's always around 2 to show it's always around the same time, meaning we're supposed to live in the present moment. In theological circles, they call it the grace-filled present moment, because the past is no more and the future is not yet. And so if we're living in the past or living in the future, we're either going to be depressed or we're going to be anxious and fearful, neurotic, if you will. And so we're made to live only in the present, because only here is where we can discover who we are, our identity. And so this secret identity, true identity, what's normal, what isn't, is tied to the present moment and tied to Bob's reality now as a father and a husband, which he's struggling to adjust to. Whereas his wife, she's adjusted to it and she's constantly frustrating that he can't accept this reality. Hence, he's always living in the past when he could be a superhero. But to his defense, he's got this incredible strength. What's it for? It's not for working at InsuraCare, the little cubicle where he works. It's so funny. He's this big, bulking, huge guy. He's in this tiny cubicle, and of all the cubicles in the office space, this is the only one with this big pillar right in the middle of it, just to show how squished he is in the world he's trying to fit into. And yet it also, I think, stands as a contrast. He's the pillar. He sees himself as the atlas that's holding up the world to keep it safe for just 5 minutes or longer, hopefully. And yet he can no longer do that. His pillar of strength is now hidden in this cubicle, in this office work where he's not any good at, and he's constantly in trouble with his boss, who's very much into time and precision and to seeing life as cogs in a machine, which Mr. Incredible cannot stand because it's forcing him into an identity and into a way of looking at time that he's not fit for. So isn't it interesting how these themes help create the tension, the drama that's unfolding in the movie? Well, this is the nature of superheroism in the movie, and I think they do just a wonderful job of showing exactly why the superheroes are super. They don't just have these incredible gifts that go beyond anybody else's, despite their envy and jealousy. They take these gifts, which are just given to them by the world in which they live, to serve others, and the others can't appreciate that. All right, now let's turn our attention to another major theme, villainy, in this case, supervillainy. And this is the case of Syndrome, the main villain in the movie. And he appears as a small boy when Mr. Incredible is saving a bank from being robbed right before he's supposed to go get married. He's got to do these last-minute, miraculous, daring feats to spare the world from all the chaos that's happening due to the criminal element. And then this young lad shows up who's a genius, clearly. He uses his intelligence to make technology. And then the technology is supposed to help him become the identity that he wants. He self-identifies as a superhero. And he doesn't stop to question or wonder whether or not others should accept his self-identity. He takes it for a given, they should. And if they don't, they're the bad guy. And that's what happens. He shows up. He decides he's a superhero, he's the sidekick for Mr. Incredible, because he idolizes Mr. Incredible, and like with all cases of idolatry, we're merely expressing our own self onto our idol of who we want to be. So his whole self-identity is selfish. And he says something interesting to Mr. Incredible. He says, "Aren't you the one who are always saying be true to yourself, yet you never say which self you're to be true too. So I've decided I'm your ward. I'm Incrediboy." His name is Buddy, and Mr. Incredible says, "Fly home, Buddy, I work alone." And now the tension comes to a snapping point, because Mr. Incredible doesn't recognize Buddy as his sidekick. Buddy decides in his own fantasy that his fantasy should be reality. And because he has the knowledge, or so he thinks, to make it reality, everybody else should accept it as well. And he imposes it. And when Mr. Incredible and the police and all the other characters in the movie refuse to recognize it, now he becomes the villain. Isn't it interesting? Nobody looked at Buddy when the movie came out as a sympathetic figure. He's accepted as a nasty villain, and rightly so, because he doesn't accept the ordered universe the way it is. He wants to make it the way he wants. And he assumes that it rests on his will. He assumes that he can make it so. It's interesting, the word wicked, if you go back to the Old English, that word wickedness, it's tied to the same word where we get the word wicker, like a wicker basket. A wicker basket, you take a reed and you can bend it. And then you make your basket with the reed. So it's an ancient root word, and the word wicked is tied to that root of the word wicker. And it means to bend. So wickedness means I think I can bend reality to my own desires, to my own identity, to my own fantasy that I'm going to impose on reality because I've rejected reality the way it is. I want to eliminate facets of reality I don't like and use my power to create the reality that I do like. And this is exactly Incrediboy / Syndrome. This is how he sees things. So when he's cast off, he burns with resentment, and from that point forward, he starts plotting his revenge on all the superheroes. And this is the nature of his villainy. His wretched self, his wickedness, when he wants to bend things according to his own will, and yet we also see in him this lack of integrity in his own identity. Which part of myself am I to be true to? He asks Mr. Incredible, which shows that there's a division in him. There's something not unified, something not integrated. Whereas you don't see this in the same way with the superhero family. Mr. Incredible recognizes he's a superhero. Mrs. Incredible recognizes, yes, but you're also a father and a husband. Those things are not necessarily disconnected, but for right now, we've got to sacrifice one for the other. And there is no problem in recognizing that sacrificing your strength for yourself and for the good of others, or at least maybe for the adventure of saving others, it might be good, but there's a greater good found in the family. This is an amazing virtue that the movie is showing us, that the good of the family is the truest and greatest good. And if you're going to use your superhero virtues or your superhero strength well, use it first for your family. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that you should hide those superhero virtues and the fact that they're forced to by a public that's envious and not grateful. Again, that kind of creates some of the challenge, some of the drama in here, because Mr. Incredible wants his kids at school to be able to use their gifts and they can't. And of course, Dash, his son, who's super fast, uses it anyway by putting a tack on his teacher's stool, and he can do it so quickly, he can move and sit back in a seat and even be videotaped doing it, and the videotape cannot clearly show that it was he who put the tack on his teacher's stool. That's how fast he is. And yet he gets in trouble. And so the mom is saying, look, you can't use your speed that way. We've got to stay hidden. Now that's what's the highest good for society, because the government has told them to, and the forces even higher than superheroes have said to them, now you have to be anonymous. So that's the greater good. And so this episode with Dash shows us something, and it's also the same episode when we see Frozone and Mr. Incredible save people from a burning building and at the same time save a bank robbery, that when we try to squash the greatness, the merit that we have, that's when it gets used for the wrong reasons. And here we come yet upon another theme in the movie. Excellence or greatness versus mediocrity and sameness. That when everybody is a super, nobody is. That's another line from the movie. And when we refuse to reward merit because we're jealous that we don't have it, or we think that somehow that violates equality, then that's when it gets used improperly. And that's what we see with Dash, and we see this strain it puts on Mr. Incredible and his friendship with Frozone and his relationship with his wife. So there's a lot of social commentary that's coming out of this movie. And that's, I think, what makes it so incredible, why the movie has lasted to this day. The makers of the movie are giving this commentary in such a way that people may not realize that's what they're doing. And it's a commentary that's as relevant 20 years later as when the movie was made. All right, so here we're set up. We got our superheroes, we have our villain who self-identifies as a hero, but his fantasy is squashed by reality. I work alone, we see autonomy, we see now family, we see the social order, we see responsibility, all of these subtexts with the identity and time all coming together, all filtering into a grand finale. Okay, what's this grand finale? Well, the villain syndrome, he's made himself in his own thinking a superhero because he's able to use technology. And through this means of technology, of using science to make gadgets, he thinks now he's equal to the superheroes. And he's made himself fabulously wealthy, unfortunately, by making weapons of war. And so yet another theme appears, violence. You see, the superheroes never use violence in a way to destroy other people. They use it to maybe subdue them, but the only thing that gets destroyed by them is the robots, where Syndrome has made his power precisely by destroying other people. And he's going to make himself a superhero by creating a robot that is so destructive that only he can destroy it and thus make himself a darling in the eye of the public. This vain, super vain alter ego that he's created from the whole idea of technology and its use for power or violence, and how that contrasts with the legitimate power that we see with the superheroes, that their power actually comes by respecting the cosmic order, by loving people over themselves, including their family, and by ordering their superhero powers accordingly to this structure of this hierarchical moral structure of the cosmos. They accept it. They don't seek to destroy it and impose it based on their own thinking. All right, now we're coming to the clash between the two. So the villain here, Syndrome, he's able to capture Mr. Incredible. Then he captures his whole family. He's going to destroy them, but first he wants them to watch him crown himself as the new superhero by sending his robot to New York City or whatever city. We're not sure which. We're not even sure what time frame the movie is set in. This is on purpose by the creators. Is it the 60s? Is it the 50s? Is it some future era? We're not supposed to know. They take iconic imagery from all of those decades and put them all together so that we're left wondering, what time is this and what place? We're not supposed to know. We're supposed to accept the fact that it's a sub-created cosmos, but that it does relate enough to our own to highlight the true nature of heroism and villainy and the hierarchical nature of goods, including the importance of family and recognizing that there are higher powers that have created a harmony, and we're supposed to accept it. Again, this is Tolkien's whole idea of sub-creation, and that's clearly respected in this animated film. I'm not saying that Brad Bird read Tolkien, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did, because I see how it lines up so well, which is why I'm talking about it with you. All right, so they're arrested. They're being held by some laser beam thing. Syndrome leaves them there. He's so confident that they can't escape. He flies to New York City or whatever city it is to combat the monster, the robot monster he created, to make himself a new superhero. Because of the crisis that he's created, he figures rightly that the people will accept him because they recognize their need for a new superhero, and he thinks now he's going to be the king of the world that he's created. He's made himself the new god. The superheroes, though, are able to escape the Incredible family. They get off his island, and they confront him, and they end up destroying the robot, and they end up destroying him and saving the family. And then they live happily ever after. There are some humorous points with their baby Jack-Jack and the superpowers that he has. But that's how the movie ends. I did a real quick job. So if you haven't watched it or haven't watched it in a while, I hope I didn't totally ruin it for you, because you should watch it because it's so well done. But here we see that the superheroes are able to resume themselves because of the crisis that gets created when we don't accept that there are certain gifts handed out in disproportionate ways. Some have more and some have less. That doesn't create a problem. That's not an evil. Rather, that means that if you've been giving something in abundance, you're supposed to share it with those who don't have that abundance. In the Catholic world, that's called the principle of solidarity, that we are united, where the harmony, the unity is brought about when we take what we have and we use it for those who don't have that. It can be material means, it can be spiritual, moral, intellectual, emotional, whatever. Whatever skills we have, someone's not going to have it the way we have it. And so we need to share it to whatever capacity we have and the relationships that we have so that we benefit those that are in relationship with us. And that's how we find harmony. That's how we find unity. That's what creates friendship. That's what makes society and the world a better. The superheroes get that. They accept that. Syndrome does not. He rejects that. Rather, he wants to use technology as power to better himself. And everything he does is the virtue signal of what a great guy he is, as he's imposed his reality on the real reality, and he's forcing everybody into that slavery. And then he's got this grand idea that once he's bored, and he expects that eventually he will get to be bored, he'll share his great gadgets with everybody so that everybody gets to be a superhero. He thinks that in so doing, he himself is going to subvert this moral order, this harmony that exists in his world, because he cannot stand the thought that there are superheroes and he's not one of them. And that's why he does everything that he does. That's what makes him a villain. And guess what? We'll accept him as a villain. We'll recognize that as villainous behavior, at least in the movie. Now we need to look and see, okay, is this movie teaching us something about our own world? I said it's a great movie on social commentary. It does have great social commentary. How are we supposed to respond? What lessons can we bring out of this? Well, we all are called to be heroes. In fact, I dare say we're all given superheroic gifts. It comes in a manifold ways. It might not be super strength or being Elastigirl or having super speed. Maybe it's being able to give humor to somebody and when they're grieving, or maybe it's to solve some particular problem, or maybe it's to reveal to others how we can accept normal anonymity of life without feeling like we got to claw and put ourselves in the public eye all the time, which is vain. That's superhero. That's a way to show, hey, I can be humble and I'm okay with that. Humility is a beautiful virtue. In fact, the life of virtues are superheroism. So this is what we can draw out of this, that all of us have our own virtuous life that we can build, and we can then use that for the good of others. And we can see the family as being the special cell of society and protect it. And seek to live it in such a way that this is how we share greatness and excellence with other people. And if we try to mash that and cut off that excellence, that merit, what's going to happen is those people with it are going to get frustrated and they're going to use it in bad ways. And of course, we see that. So you see, wow, lots happening in this movie. But the reason why this movie works is because it's teaching us something about the primary world. So we recognize this is a fake world. It's created. It's computer generated. So technology made it, so we can recognize there's some good there. We see that there's superheroes in this world that we don't have in our world, not with that kind of strength or speed or elasticity or ability to turn water into ice or whatever. We acknowledge that we don't know what time and what place it takes place. So the creators of this are tipping the hat that, yeah, this is a made up thing, and we accept that. But the reason why we accept it is because what it shows us about the real world is so insightful, and it's so subtle, and it's so carefully crafted that if we don't know any better, we'll miss it. So we can go back and rewatch it over and over again and always discover something new. So this is what makes this movie so wonderful. I hope you go watch it. If you haven't watched it in a while, treat yourself to it. And one final thing. The reason why we're doing these video casts is I want you to have a means of having good conversation with kids, grandkids, family, friends. Don't spend so much time just being receptive to the social media out there. As we see in this movie, it can create opinions that are actually not good. Rather, let's build our relationships. Let's build our family and our friendships. Let's bring harmony out of chaos, unity out of disunity by building these friendships, by talking about things that are meaningful. So in watching these little clips, I'm hoping I'm giving you some ideas that you can bring to your art, your stories, your interest in technology, muscle cars, or whatever it is, so that you can discuss this with people and deepen your relationships with them. That's how you can be super. Thank you for joining me. It's always a joy. I'm Dr. Troy Hinkle. Until next time.